On behalf of HPE, NVIDIA, and Carahsoft, we would like to welcome you to today's podcast, focused around smart cities, data capture, and analysis. We're Jim Albuquerque, GIS and Emerging Technology Manager for the City of Raleigh, North Carolina. Justin Sherwood, Information Technology Business Relationship Manager for the Town of Cary, North Carolina. Peter Moser, Chief Technologist and Strategist of Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. And Adam Scraba, Director of Product Marketing for NVIDIA, will discuss how an IoT implementation will accelerate the digital transformation in your agency.
So the first question is going to be for Jim. So you obviously are the Emerging Technology Manager for the City of Raleigh. What projects are you undergoing right now from a smart city data collection perspective? I know we're talking IoTs today, we're talking data collection. As the leader for you guys in the City of Raleigh, what is your perspective on this? What are you guys going through?
Yeah. So we see projects in kind of two different flavors. One is very smart city centric, where we're deploying instrumentation or sensors to collect data to allow decision makers to make decisions around strategic direction for the city. We in IT are very much involved in kind of conception as well as the planning around that, those sorts of projects. And, you know, there's a handful of those happening in our city and other cities like ours. Another thing that's happening at a much higher rate is just infrastructure projects where that infrastructure is being delivered with instrumentation or sensors. And oftentimes our business units or operational leaders don't understand that the infrastructure that they're implementing has instrumentation kind of embedded in it. And so what we're doing is we're sort of, you know, to use the phrase, kind of building the plane while it's flying, trying to make sense of this kind of digital, we call it digital exhaust, that these assets are burning into the ether, trying to capture it and make sense of it and then feed it back to those operational folks to make better decisions.
Perfect. Yeah. And, you know, a great point there. Obviously, this feeding back the data, as you mentioned, with the sensors, I think that's definitely applicable. We're going to see a lot more comments on that. I think that's going to be kind of driving the future of modern modernization in the space. Adam, Peter, Justin, anyone want to add anything to that as well?
Well, one of the things that I think Jim's probably faced is many cities kind of work on individual use cases, depending on the department who's funding it. But you know, IT's got the challenge of trying to bring those all together and standardize so that the city as a whole is a benefactor of all these individual use cases that might be funded by a particular department. Jim, is that kind of in your experience, is kind of trying to drive standardization?
Absolutely. You know, so there's a couple of things. There's the technology standardization, right? Then there's this whole marketing communication piece to make sure that the organization is aware that we, one, have the capability to do this. Two, that we now have an inventory of data that they could leverage that may or may not be applicable in their mind to solving some of their business challenges. And then the third one is once they do identify it, how do we deliver it to them in a way that is usable for them?
Perfect. So there's nothing else to add than that. I want to ask the second part of that question too, Jim, and we kind of addressed this a little bit, but how is all that data right now? What kind of businesses are you seeing impacted? What kind of knowledge do you think is coming out of that to impact and help you guys, the businesses you're working with, partners, right? Everyone else in the ecosystem.
So on the operation side, I'm going to go on my soapbox a little bit, but cities are really interesting in the diversity of services that we provide. Right, we keep our citizens safe, we fill potholes, we get people to where they're going to go, we drive strategy around land use planning. It's just this random mixed mass of services. And so we are seeing IoT, real-time data, emerging technology in all of these spaces. For me, I think the massive opportunity is in transportation. So just it's touching the entire end-to-end to transportation. So people move around our city in a variety of ways. They make a bunch of choices on a day-to-day basis. And we are trying to be more strategic about how we deliver infrastructure to meet those needs. And to be honest, we have a lot of transportation engineers who are very smart and do a lot of reacting. This new opportunity gives us this opportunity to look at a granular level all the way to aggregate and start to model our city in a way that just was not possible 2, 5, 7 years ago.
And Jim, I think you've said before to us in some of our conversations that City of Raleigh has a unique situation and that you're growing at such a crazy rate and you've got, you know, existing infrastructure that it's not like you can turn on a dime and just all of a sudden throw in new roads. I think that's kind of challenging.
Absolutely. You know, and this is not just happening in Raleigh, but there's also this mode choice around transit, bike, ped, and those things are happening at a social level. I know that Justin, Carrie, you're seeing it, that's happening socially. We intrinsically know that that's happening. Do we have data to support it? And then can we make these investment decisions based on the data that we're seeing?
One other question. One of the things that strikes me about another conversation we've had is the idea of sporadic statistical sampling of data versus 24/7 data. And I have to imagine that changes the game for you significantly.
Yeah. So I'm not a transportation engineer by any stretch, but my understanding is historically, that is how we understand how people move around our city, is we hire folks to do counting, whether it be counting folk onboarding, offboardings of buses, counting cars, making turning movement counts. And so on Tuesday at 9 o'clock, I could tell you how many cars took a left turn. I have no idea if that was a regular day or a regular day, but really this IoT, computer vision, video analytics, that gives us this opportunity to really put our finger on the pulse and then not only understand how people behave, but understand if today is different than it was than normal. And should we take a tactical response to that? Or should we, you know, should that affect planning? I get really excited about this stuff. So I'm going to shut up.
Yeah, it's really the stuff of the future and kind of the stuff of comic books and movies that we used to see growing up, right? But it's cool to see. And Jim, I'm sure you're Jim and Adam and Peter and Justin, all of you guys are in a cool place to see the future of this, right? And kind of be leaders in this space. So I'm happy to have, get some of the insights. So yeah, looking at the time, of course, well, I think we'll leave that talk track there. We'll go to the next question. We're going to direct this one, Justin. We're going to hear from you now. Wanted to see, obviously, as the IT business relationship manager for the town of Cary, I was wanted to ask you this, of course, how would you go about, managing data generation and collection within a smart city? Data traffic, right? What is that? Does that give you a holistic view? What kind of things do you want to look at?
Yeah, thank you. First of all, so I want to thank NVIDIA and HP for being here. And it's always a pleasure to be with Jim, a very intelligent fellow. So always learn something new every time we talk, and Carisoft for putting this on. But yeah, absolutely. I think I can tell you how we approach it from a smart city standpoint here at the town of Cary. It's really kind of, first of all, it's the governance. It's understanding what the structure, control, accountability is for the data that we are ingesting. And it's creating what we did. We created a committee, Smart Cities Committee, that touched every department here at the town to allow folks to have that view into what we're trying to accomplish, from a data perspective. Also IoT, what kind of sensors are we wanting to deploy? What kind of use cases are we trying to deploy in our environment? And then essentially, what kind of problems are we trying to solve, right? So creating that group of folks that can, have that open dialogue and communicate what we're trying to accomplish, having them from different departments, finance, water resources, public safety. Jim, you touched base on public safety earlier too, right? So what are they seeing from a holistic viewpoint? Without any of that work, there's always going to be some risks, understanding the data. I know we went down a path of noise sensor, trying to understand how can we leverage noise, or what can we do with the data from noise? I don't know about you guys, but that's a lot of data that comes in every second, millisecond. What do you do with it? Are you parsing it before we get it? Or are we just dropping it in and trying to understand what that looks like? So the data is just keep coming in. So we have to, think about what that looks like. And then obviously from an operational standpoint, consumption storage, where are we going with it? How can we leverage the cloud for these type of technologies and, dip our toes into the machine learning or AI in the future? But yeah, I mean, I don't think we've got the perfect solution. I think, at least getting everyone at the table to talk about the data and what we're going to do with it. How can we give it back to our constituents here at the town? What can they use it for? I think we're in a great place. I think Jim would agree with us from a locational standpoint with a lot of our colleges, community colleges. You got your Duke, Chapel Hill, NC State. So you have all those folks that could leverage that information just to continue their education, but also help understand what's going on in the different cities. So that's kind of the town of Cary's approach, and that's what we've done so far.
That's a great approach, Justin. And one of the things that, in my opinion, one of the things we've seen with cities that have been more successful in getting more out of their investment is doing exactly what you're doing, is kind of creating kind of a common data plane and having more of a publish subscribe kind of service to your different constituents, because there's so much of that data that's common across all of those departments, and they could benefit from the data collected by maybe some of the other use cases. And just that governance alone is so critical from the beginning, you know, having that as the foundation for building your, not only the data platform, but the data use and the policies and governance around that, I think is a fantastic approach.
And just something I wanted to add, and I think Justin knows this, is that there's two models that we have regionally. One is that we collaborate. We collaborate pretty closely. But another thing is we compete, right? So we, you know, when we see an article from a Carisoft publication that says Cary and HPE did X, Y, and Z, we take notice, right? And that not only on the technology side that happens, but also at our leadership level, right? They start to, you know, if they're apprehensive about change, they start to become less apprehensive. And if they're supportive of change, they start to apply pressure to IT or the business. Hey, like, we got to keep up with the Joneses a little bit. So I think, again, that regional perspective, you know, sometimes Raleigh's pushing Cary, sometimes Cary's pushing Raleigh, sometimes NC State's pushing both of us, sometimes one of the businesses in the triangle is driving us. So I think that is really a huge, we're very lucky to be where we are.
I agree, 100%, Jim.
Good point, Jim and Justin, and thanks for that. You know, I think competing and also working together, and I like that perspective, as you mentioned, you know, trying to see what other people are doing and use that, of course, to your advantage in planning and planning for the future. So thanks for that context there. So for the next question, this is going to be both for Peter and Adam. I'm going to show a graphic before that actually going to give a little bit more context. And Peter, I'm sure you'll be the expert on this graph. So I'm going to lean on you, of course, but a little bit, but wanted to showcase this as a little bit of a data exchange model. So yeah, so to you guys then, so presenting this kind of data picture, data perspective, right? So I want to get to the question, right? So this one's going to be strictly for, I think, Pete, well, I guess, again, of course, Jim and Justin, if you guys want to chime in after, of course. But to start off, Peter, if you want to say, how do you envision data collection from your perspective? Do you think AI is going to be key here at the edge in the collection process centrally? Will everything run by machines? Is there still going to be a human element in this? Definitely, I know, you know, kind of the thinking of Terminator, right? Is everything going to be controlled by machines in the future? Or where's the human in this? So, Peter, I guess you first, if you want to chime in, give your perspective.
Sure. Thank you very much, Nikhil. So, with this slide really kind of illustrates is the need for standardization. And we've been, by ourselves and Adam with NVIDIA, have been working with the Autonomy Institute and other partners to really drive standards for cities. That way we can help create an affordable platform that does more than one thing. And this allows, when cities make these investments, the ability to create that common data aggregation plane, if you will, and connect it not only from the edge, where a lot of the data is coming from vehicles, because one of the things Jim mentioned is transportation. You have sensors and you have all sorts of things creating data. Well, that data has got to be A, captured, aggregated, basically enriched or normalized so you can do something with it. And with many of these use cases, you need kind of real-time analysis on that data, because the response time, like say a traffic situation, an emergency situation, demands a real-time response. So that means you have to push the analysis, and in AI terminology is called inferencing, where you actually analyze the data there at the edge. And this is where Adam, I think, can really elaborate, because with the great work that NVIDIA has done in so many ways with software accelerators, et cetera, to help us, and HPE being the foundation for the compute piece here, to help drive that kind of rich standalone capability where it's needed, but then have it networked or fabriced into these other data collection points so you get a more holistic view of the city and the operations, but then create a data lifecycle management piece to this with that data plane, because eventually you're going to run out of capacity because you're creating so much data. So you have to look at that full lifecycle, and that's where that whole data governance piece comes in. So Adam, I know that you've done a lot of work here. What are your thoughts around this whole thing around data and intelligence?
Yeah, I know it's a big effort. We've been at this for a number of years. You know, I think without a question, I think we listen to Jim talk and Justin talk about instrumenting city infrastructure. There's no question that AI is as a foundational kind of technology is going to help, has helped us solve previously unsolvable problems. You know, I think that a really important analogy that I use and we use, and even Jim and I we've talked about this before, is if we think about specific problems, maybe we take, for example, the intersection, right? And Jim mentioned literally manual counts of turns of cyclists and cars. You know, we think about, we really need to automate a lot of these tasks. We need to, you know, increasingly we'll probably automate the intersection. The intersection will become like a robot. And a lot of our city infrastructure will be automated and a lot of the tasks will become automated. You know, we think about a robot or you think about an autonomous vehicle, it's really three parts. There's perception, there's reasoning, and then there's action taking. And, you know, Jim alluded to most of, you know, historically, the perception layer was literally people with clickers on the street, you know, click, click, clicking how many left turns. So that perception layer is going to almost entirely go to machines and is increasingly going to machines. We're working, you know, with Jim and team and many other cities around the world to do this. This is a, you know, this was arguably one of the most mature modalities of AI is using a video sensor. And it turns out that all of our intersections around the world, largely, we have video cameras deployed. There's a billion cameras deployed on this earth that is largely not doing much right now. And so we're going to leverage a lot of this this existing infrastructure and use AI to understand this in real time. And we're talking 24/7. We do work with the largest, for example, the largest manufacturers of the world that do the exact same thing. They, you know, used to do statistical sampling of an aluminum can off a production line every once in a while in a day. Now every can that goes off a manufacturing line can be inspected visually for defects to understand really quickly there's anomalies happening. The exact same thing is going to happen on our city streets and in major infrastructure. So AI 100% is going to go to the perception layer, and that's happening to a great degree right now. We're using that on to analyze video cameras, to automate the manual counting of pedestrians and cyclists and UPS trucks, and giving priority to first responders. All that really important work is happening. The second layer, that reasoning, is also increasingly now going to be automated. I think that's probably the next few chapters of this journey. So, you know, I guess to sort of wrap this all together, machines are going to be critical and are critical already, and AI is going to be foundational to this. Obviously, there's going to be humans in the loop, and there needs to be, but certainly I think this is something that we can, as an industry, we need to tackle immediately, because there are huge gains, safety gains, there's efficiency gains that we can tackle, you know, immediately on this, and we are.
Perfect. So being, you know, in your case, Adam and Peter, you guys are obviously partners and you work with a lot of the city leaders out there. How are you working with other partners, maybe with yourselves, with the city leaders, right? How are you helping address those budget concerns, right? Those financial concerns that and just making sure that, you know, the cities are doing most with their taxpayer dollars that they have to show, right, what they're doing, and making sure that, you know, the solutions that we're looking for, right, are obviously affordable and things that they can utilize to actually want to transform their cities, right? Keeping that into context. So whoever wants to start, Adam.
Maybe I can start, and I'm sure that Peter's got his perspective as well on this. I think it's really important, and this is such a rich topic. So first off, how are we working with partners? So I think that HPE and NVIDIA in this journey, we probably think, and Peter could argue or agree or disagree, we think of ourselves more as a platform partner. We think of ourselves as a technology and a business partner in this journey. NVIDIA's role and a lot of this stuff is actually nurturing and developing a really rich ecosystem of specialists. And we can almost think of them as app providers. You could almost think of, you know, sometimes we talk about the idea of, you know, an iPhone and apps on an iPhone. I mean, these are capabilities that you consume on a daily basis. And you might start small. I just want to use my phone to do email. And then I'm going to expand to other things. that's kind of what we do. So we develop a really incredible ecosystem of partners that we can do matchmaking with our city, you know, with our government partners to tackle their problems as small or as large as they want to get to. So that's the first thing. I think the other thing that I would, and I even feel like Jim and Justin both kind of tipped their hat a little bit towards this, that there sometimes are these point solutions that get positioned and they're like these, you know, these very definitive bespoke solutions that require very specific hardware and software. And that's, you know, that's an approach. I think another approach that we kind of look at is thinking about, you know, partnering with platform providers. And that's another, you know, way to sort of be thoughtful about how you invest. And of course, there's, you know, invest small and scale with these kind of platforms. And Peter, I don't know if you'd agree or disagree with what I said.
No, I agree, Adam. I mean, HPE, one of the things we talked about affordability, and one of the things that HPE has done now is we've actually started branching out and offering consumption-based services for cities and on-premise or hybrid if they're using other clouds and the like. So what we try to do is partner with great companies like NVIDIA that has, you know, leading technologies. And what this does is this helps vet a lot of the partner ecosystem for our customers, because that's a lot of work. And then when we sit down and we test our stuff together and not only make sure that it performs well, the interoperability is there, but sometimes we do 1+1=3, right? Where we invest and take our individual assets and together make them better than if you were to do it by yourself. That's part of the value add of the partnerships as well. So I think as part of the partner ecosystem, we try to give the customer added value beyond our own individual products or services that we offer by doing our own co-investment, but also by helping vet other partners in the ecosystem to Adam's point. So the customer doesn't end up with a bunch of bespoke or boutique type solutions where there may be partners out there that can provide that same or better capability that is much more open and interoperative. It gives, again, the customer the outcomes they're looking for at an affordable price. And perhaps if they're looking for a consumption-based model where they don't have to expend so much capital, you know, their own dollars, you know, they can just consume it back as a service and just buy an outcome. So that's kind of the way we look at the ecosystem, is a means of A, taking our ecosystem, like Adam's ecosystem from NVIDIA, bring it to the table, already vetted partners, where we've invested to make things better, 1+1=3, and then give customers the option on how they want to consume to help conserve capital and make it more sustainable.
Perfect. Thanks for that, Peter. Adam, anything to add on your end, Jim and Justin?
Nope. We just submit trial and error costs money. And I'm not saying it's a bad approach, but if we can help minimize the amount of trial and error that you do, you know, they call it fail fast these days, then that saves you money and time. And, you know, to Jim's point, you have internal selling to do. What you want to do is make sure that your constituents see you in the best possible light, that you have much more on the positive side of the ledger versus on the fail side of the ledger.
So I do have something to add, which is something interesting that I see, which is around the smart city kind of marketing, is that fail fast idea. And our leadership says they're fully supportive. I haven't read too many articles around failures from cities. So there's this idea that, and it gets to Justin's point, the accountability for spending taxpayer dollars for R&D, right? That's a tough sell at a ones and zeros level. It's easy conceptually, right? Everybody's supportive of living in a very innovative city and all those sorts of things. But when you start losing accounting of 50K because the solution didn't work or whatever, there's a pretty strong level of accountability. So I think it's something that we struggle with. And I think partners, the good news is they understand the situation that we're in, knowing that we got to try and do both of those things, right? Work pilot projects that may or may not be completely successful, but at the end of the day, they have to be successful. So just as interesting dichotomy.
Perfect, Jim. Thanks for that. And Adam and Peter as well. Okay, so we will change the perspective a little bit. I want to go back to you, Jim, in this case. I want to see, you know, I guess this will be a question for both you and Justin. But as municipal IT leaders, right, so I wanted to ask a little bit, we kind of touched on this in a previous question, but that regional aspect of IoT and data collection, right, To what context would you be working with maybe Justin or in the town of Cary or that data? Can that data be shared between you guys? Is there a way that kind of two cities collectively can do this kind of stuff together and it kind of address those concerns and those goals and some of those initiatives? So yeah, I want to hear from you guys on that.
So I'll talk about transportation if you'd be willing to talk about stormwater, Justin. So, you know, transportation, as much as I wish the world ended at our borders, it would make my life so much easier. The world doesn't. And so like that transportation kind of modeling that I talked about earlier, it's complex if the world ended at our borders, but it doesn't. And so trips are generated from the city, outside of the city, to the city from Cary or from surrounding towns. And so all of us are trying to understand how our cities are operating. So we're all collecting that data, right? And so if we are not cooperating on this, collaborating, sharing data, the investments that we would have to make to understand what happens outside of the city are exponentially higher. And so again, the good news is we've had some good successes in, we have regional partnerships, we know each other. And so I'd love for Justin to talk about a specific example around stormwater where I think we've made some really big successes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think kind of go back to the original question. I think it's extremely important that we, you know, as a regional partner work together. Jim and I have worked together for, you know, the last 6 months to a year on different initiatives, most specifically the stormwater initiative that we've taken on here, where you think about it, right? So if you have a town on top of a hill and it rains a lot, where does that water go, right? It goes right down the hill. So other municipalities, other agencies that are at the bottom of the hill, where does that water go once it hits them, right? So having the ability to take that data from sensors that are out in our different basins and creeks and take that data and send it out regionally so folks know, hey, we had a big rain event here 30 minutes ago, 45 minutes ago. It's going to take 45 minutes basically to get to the bottom of the basin. And what do you guys need to do to prepare? Is that sending out proactive public works folks to put up signage, flood alert, or is that a flood light that you just flip the switch, turn it on? Or are we automating all that? Are we just saying, hey, it's reached this type of this so much rain and where's it going? What do we do? Do we send an automated alert to someone else's CRM or case management solution, whatever that can be, 311, and proactively be out in the forefront of that? Obviously, here at Cary, we're still evolving and trying to figure out what that looks like. We have a lot more work to do on our side, at least from a data and sensor deployment side of things. But sending the information to the right folks so they know what to do in a reactive way is definitely important. And, you know, Jim, you took the wind out of my sails with traffic. You know, that's one of the most complex ones I think we could try to solve. I think. But the best part is that we all recognize that that is a tough one and that we can work together to solve it, you know.
Some of the things that we've tried to do when we talked about governance, part of that governance is that control plane, that data control plane, and that whole publish and subscribe model where maybe that publish and subscribe includes other cities, the state, maybe the federal government around emissions data, whatever it might be. But one of the things that HP has done also is what we call is federated learning. Actually, it was Google that invented it. We just changed it. But basically what this allows you to do is access other people's data, run your models against that data, maybe even train your models without actually having to move the data because of data privacy reasons and the like. And then they can benefit from your data and you can benefit from theirs, but without actually moving the data and maybe violating those policies. So that's a 1+1=3 in my opinion there. And we kind of use blockchain to help you with that whole chain of custody thing. So you can prove, like, no, nobody actually saw this data. They just trained on it and they took their parameters and their model back. I know it's kind of a technical answer, but it kind of boils down to A, governance, you know, the data governance, having that data control plane, which is critical in my opinion, how that governs around access, publish and subscribe. And that brings into ways how you would share that data where you remain compliant around the use of that data. So those are just some ideas to help those that are interested in that topic, which I think is a critical one, how they might address it.
And just at a kind of a blocking and tackling level for us, Peter, what you just said is exactly right. So this, all the work that we did was to grease the skids so that when I see a drop of rain, I can subscribe to something and I know exactly I can subscribe to five things and I'm going to get the same thing from all five of the feeds. They're all five different towns. It's all the same thing. I know exactly what it looks and smells like. It looks and smells exactly like my data. And so therefore it just seamlessly fits into this model that we had kind of spent time developing to say, now instead of this model, which is this big, it's now this big with data. And that was, it's a fairly simplistic kind of model. And we're hoping that we can expand it to transportation. Obviously, transportation is seven layers deep, right? You don't just solve transportation, you just solve CAD, you solve bikes, you solve transit, you solve, right? And each one of those is probably complex in and of itself. But the idea is that you're working on these standards so that users, they get what they expect.
Perfect. Thanks for that, everyone. Thanks for the answer. Definitely interesting to see kind of, all the use cases that could possibly happen. As you mentioned, data coming from different sources. And in the case of the rain, hopefully, making sense of it, but then also leveraging it right to the best of the correlation, right, to being able to share that, as you mentioned, with kind of like a data pool for everyone. So happy to have that perspective, and thank you guys. So we're getting close to the time. So I have a couple questions just to kind of close out. So this one's going to actually be for you, Adam. And I want to see, obviously, as a partner and working in NVIDIA, right, I'm sure you guys are working on a lot of projects for kind of innovative projects, future development kind of stuff. So what do you think, the future for us holds, right, in terms of AI transformation? We hear about it, right? We talked about it today, some of the cool use cases that are happening, some of the things that Jim and Justin are working on. What do you think is going to be, give us like a 5-10 year plan? Like, what do you think is what we're going to see now, what we're going to see in the future when it comes to AI and IoT and data collection?
I think it's a super exciting area. I definitely think that we're in a world where we're struggling with the fact that a lot of this technology and a lot of these capabilities are effectively being bolted on to literally bolted and or duct taped onto our infrastructure. So we have existing infrastructure in this country, and we are bolting a lot of instrumentation onto it and trying to, to achieve some of the goals that Jim and Justin had mentioned. And that's great. And we're going to do that. I think what the future holds is this idea that we're now going to be able to, just like we do in other industries, where, some people call it the digital twin, where we can actually now model and design infrastructure with the thought of how we're going to operate it in the future. How are we going to build into this design of infrastructure sensors and things to allow us to react quickly and efficiently to whatever that infrastructure requires, whether it's a bridge or it's an intersection source or a building, an airport, a gate, a terminal at an airport. So I think this idea is really important. And we're seeing this increasingly now where the sensors and the AI and the capabilities are going to be built in from the beginning and simulated and then rolled out. So it's going to be a design to operate world that we're going to head into. I think that's really exciting.
Perfect. And Peter, do you have anything, if you wanted to add anything else as well? I'm sure you're working on a few projects on your end too.
Well, absolutely. I think Adam's right. This is around minimizing the fail fast thing, right? Where we do as much digitally as we can to better know the outcome before we actually deploy it. That's why you saw that pin example earlier, is to start minimizing the bolt-on, because there's consequences to the bolt-on approach. Not that you don't do it, it's just consequences to it, but allowing greater standardization, because this ties into affordability and more things that are more fit for purpose, where things were designed from the beginning for its particular purpose with the governance in the back end comprehended in its design. Hopefully that makes sense. And that way cities get a much more predictable outcome and a much more less bespoke, but more standardized approach to deployment and interoperability. And then that minimizes the amount of resources it consumes from the city, staff and dollars and infrastructure change and all this other stuff. So there's a huge amount of benefit to that approach. So I agree wholeheartedly with Adam. And I think more and more cities are starting to get on board with that concept and approach.
Perfect. Adam and Peter, thanks for that. Kind of a little bit of a developments in the future. Jim, Justin, if there's anything that you guys want to add on, some of the things that, kind of we talked about it, of course, some smart city initiatives you guys are working on already, but any kind of final thoughts on what the future may hold and what future plans you guys have?
So, we look for the future. We look to partners like NVIDIA, HPE, and other industry leaders to you know, be the guiding light of kind of what the future is. And the digital twin stuff is really exciting to us, right? So we're doing a little bit of the digital twin just in the urban design stuff, just to see what the city looks like based on modeling. But really, when we start to feed instrumentation into that and have it be not just a visual model, but instead an algorithmic model, I'm just like, that's the comic book stuff that you were talking about, Nikhil, earlier.
Yeah.
Really excited about that opportunity.
Yeah. And I guess from my standpoint, I'm seeing a lot of these sensors kind of overlap, right? So giving out multiple data points on different initiatives or use cases and understanding, it's almost like you say comic book, I automatically think my nerdy part comes out and says, you know, like team ups, right? So using these for like team ups for, you know, multiple reasons, if it's say like a soil sensor that could help out Parks and Rec know if a field is too wet to use for a recreational use, but also helps Public Works understand what they need to do from a ground keeping, you know, like water maintenance, right? So it's just almost like team ups. And that's kind of what I'm seeing. Digital twin is always going to be something that's cool and exciting. And then it helps with that test case and leveraging that. But, you know, just kind of from a carry perspective, that's what I'm really seeing right now.
And I'll give you an example. We're working with the NREL, which is the National Reliability Energy Lab, to actually create a digital twin test bed. And so the intent there is to model building power optimization, grid utilization optimization, things of that nature. It's doing exactly what Adam just described, where we're using modeling techniques, using as much ground truth data as we can to get some great insights into what the solution really does need to look like when it's deployed to minimize that whole trial and error process for the city. So that's in process now.
And one last thing I wanted to add is that not only do the partner help kind of define direction for us, but consumer grade technology drives, right? The amount of times that people come in and say, hey, my refrigerator ordered my milk for me. Why can't your website do a good search? Or why can't you tell me how many cars went through this intersection? Those things are, you're starting to see, again, this consumer grade technology kind of putting pressure on government to be more agile.
Just to give you a data point on that, imagine the cities across this country and these things sitting outdoors having to operate minus 40 to plus 70 C temperature range or humidity, you know, just kind of go down that. That's where the consumer side doesn't understand that and how you have to have, like I mentioned earlier, purpose built. And purpose built makes a big difference because you don't want to be changing out this technology every 12 months or 24 months. It's not cost effective. And that's why people like NVIDIA, HPE, and other partners are doing purpose built solutions so that the ongoing sustainability, remember I mentioned affordable, but also sustainable. Yeah, these solutions have to last a long time. Now, the cities can't afford to be changing them out every 2 to 3 years, replacing batteries and stuff like that. And that's so critical in your thinking. When you do that journey map that I was mentioning earlier, that's comprehended into that whole governance, your strategy around doing it.
Perfect. Thanks, everyone. And just to add to that a little bit, Peter, it's like, you know, as a consumer too, we want it now, right? We want it now. We don't really not always think about all the use cases and all the things, all the adjustments that need to be made, as you mentioned, purpose built, sustainability built. So
thanks for listening. If you'd like more information on how Carahsoft, HPE, or NVIDIA can assist your agency, please visit kara.io/smartcities. Or email us at countoncarahsoft@carahsoft.com. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.